Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:16 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is July 19th, and I thought we'd kick off with oil because it's down in a very dynamic manner, and it is right on the low of the day. And this is a significant downward dynamic. It's also pulling back below the $70 area, so it's pulling back into the underlying range. So that's an additional inconsistency. It's the biggest downward move we've seen since March, and this is on the back of news from OPEC that they're going to add an additional 400,000 barrels a day to global supply. Well, that's a fraction of the quantity they're holding off the market. So it's at least suggesting that OPEC is willing to do something to bring down the price of oil, and they are keen to ensure that prices don't accelerate higher, which would damage growth internationally, but they don't want them probably falling very far either, because it would damage growth at home. So we're probably moving into a much more range-bound environment. And to me at least, this is representative of a rather different environment than what we had coming out of the credit crisis, and definitely after the tech bubble. Because oil is not in short supply, and there is plenty of it about. So when we think about why prices should go back above 100, well, to get back above $100, we would need to see economic growth that eats into an excess supply situation of 8 million barrels a day. And that would not only require a full recovery in the global economy after the ravages of the pandemic, but it would have to grow additionally from there as well. And we're looking at a global situation where there are significant efforts underway to try and undermine demand growth in the oil sector. So in order for prices to get back above $100, we're going to have to see most particularly an economic recovery, and then additional sources of new demand coming through, and that is beyond the transportation sector. I think it's likely that we're going to see material science rally to the cause of redeploying demand from the transportation sector, and that there will be significant new breakthroughs in material science to eat away at that excess supply of oil, but it isn't going to happen overnight. And it suggests that we're going to be in a very volatile environment for the oil sector for the foreseeable future. And potentially we're at the upper side of the range. So a lot of shale gas and oil, and particularly oil, it is economic now close to $40 a barrel, which represents the low. And prices will have to fall below that level in order to really eat into supply growth. A large number of the shale companies, they hedged their exposure in the mid-50s, and it's they were being singled out in news stories last week that because they are losing money on their hedges, but those hedges are looking a lot better today than they were last week. So this suggests to me at least that we're going to be in a difficult environment for the energy sector, and that it's not going to provide the kind of escape route from volatility in the stock market or even the value proposition. To me at least, it looks like a value trap, and particularly for the European energy companies. Companies like Chevron, they have first thing is that they have an extraordinarily long record of paying dividends. So that is certainly in their favor, and the yield is still around the 5.5% level, and that yield is likely to improve as the price starts to come back down again. But it's a value play and a yield play rather than a capital appreciation play. So anyone who's trying to capture a yield will probably be rewarded by waiting a little while longer. But then, of course, we had the other big move in here today, which was in the bond market, and the 10-year yield compressed by 10 basis points. Excuse me, at the moment it's 11.5 basis points. That's a significant acceleration in the compression in the yield. So investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the fact that the Federal Reserve is correct and that inflationary pressures are going to moderate. Well, the significant decline that we had in the oil price will certainly help to support that view in here today. But then we also have the, I think, and it's a relevant consideration. We've had this exceptionally large differential between the quantity on the demand for semiconductors and the ability of the sector to respond. So a point made by Fred Hickey, which I think is relevant, is that during a supply deficit, you get over-ordering by companies. And then when they get, or they take possession of all the chips that they over-ordered, well, then they need to work off that excess inventory. And they stop ordering. So then that is one of the primary reasons why the semiconductor sector is extremely cyclical. So semiconductors started to pull back last week, and they were actually well off the low in here today. But one thing that I think is particularly relevant is we've had a very impressive advance. So there is no denying that we did have some acceleration. Now we've had a loss of momentum, and now we've also had two failed upside breaks, and we still have the succession of higher reaction lows. So this is about as textbook type 2 top formation development as we might wish for. And the conclusion to a type 2 top is a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. So until we actually see that, it's only signaling that we might have top formation development underway. But the reality is that when you hear from Taiwan Semiconductor that they're going to increase their supply of microcontrollers by 60% by the end of the year, starting this year, this month, it suggests that the shortage of microcontrollers is going to be resolved within the next 5 months. And then where are the new orders going to come from to sustain that additional new supply? So it's a question that hasn't yet been answered. And then when competition increases for that available supply, well, then margins will compress. So there are certainly risks in this sector right now. But the other way of thinking about it is that this sector and growth generally, and the demand growth for semiconductors is from the tech sector and the growth sectors. And when bond yields contract, those sectors do well. So in many respects, that's for the reason why it's steadied in here today, is because those yields have been compressing. But then we can think about the performance of the wider market, and the Dow Jones having pushed on to a new high just as recently as Friday. It had the downside key reversal and then followed through in a dynamic manner in here today. When we think about the FTSE 250 in the UK, it's rolling over. So it's down in a dynamic manner and pulling back to test its sequence of higher reaction lows. So it certainly would be, I think, comforting for investors if we saw a rebound reasonably soon. The Euro Stoxx index was also down in a dynamic manner in here today, so also testing its sequence of higher reaction lows. So we're at a rather pivotal point here because of the decline in oil prices and the compression in yields, and then the spike in the VIX. Now, the thing that has been the hallmark of the VIX index over the course of this last year has been that when we get these spikes on the upside, they don't, they're not sustained beyond a couple of days. And the bigger the spike we've had, the shorter the time that it has been sustained. And each one of the peaks has been at a lower level. So if that is to remain the case, well, we would need to see the VIX coming back down again tomorrow. Because The distance between where the current level is and the last significant peak back in May isn't all that much. So another day on the downside for stock markets would break that sequence of lower rally highs. And we've had a sea of red in stock markets today. Almost every market was in negative territory. The Chinese market this morning was in mildly positive territory, but most markets are down well in excess of 2%. The NASDAQ down about 1.5%. And when we look at the movers on the NASDAQ, well, Nvidia was among the better performers, and that's a big chip company. And then we can also look at the other big performers like Moderna and Peloton, DocuSign. So those were some of the biggest winners in 2020. So they were the pandemic stocks. So another reason for why the market is pulling back is because people are starting to worry about the spread of the Delta variant. And Indonesia has been the country with among the highest number of new cases over the last while. The stock market has been moderating. I think the bigger moves that we're seeing are in the currency markets. So the Indonesian rupiah, although it has been rather steady, what we're certainly seeing in here is that Indonesia is holding up reasonably well, despite the fact that it has a rising number of cases and a lower rate of vaccination overall. In the Philippines, they are certainly allowing the currency to take most of the pressure, and the Philippine peso has been weakening, and the Thai baht has been weakening, and the Vietnamese market has been under some pressure recently as well. The challenge for these countries is that they skirted the worst pressure from the coronavirus last year, and now they're seeing rising numbers of cases. They are also responding to the potential that economic growth is coming back less aggressively. So we've had a pronounced decline, we've had an aggressive rebound, and now growth is moderating. And central banks are talking about removing stimulus and tapering their assistance. And they're doing that at a time when the pace of the recovery is moderating. So what we have here are the ingredients for a correction, and at least a reversion back down towards the mean. Now, Vietnam has almost done it. And then just how bad the reaction to the rise in the number of cases of the Delta variant becomes, I think we have to look at the UK, because I thought that these charts from the UK were particularly interesting. The UK is doing an awful lot of testing. So the number of cases, which is what people are really paying attention to, is trending higher. And it's really not all that far away from where it was at the peak back at the beginning of this year. And then we have the number of deaths. Now, the number of deaths is rising, but it is nowhere near the peak from when we had the peak in cases. So as long as this remains the case, well, investors should start to pay attention here, because it's efficacy data for the vaccines. Now, then in between those two, we have the number of the large number of tests that are being done, and then the rising number of positive tests. So definitely there are more people getting it, but there are still millions of tests being performed. So with all of these tests, we are finding the majority of people, and the number of people being hospitalized has ramped up. So this is, I think, the biggest factor to pay attention to. The UK will be able to live with the coronavirus because of the high rate of vaccination, provided the number of hospitalizations does not accelerate higher. And if the number of hospitalizations accelerates higher, well, then that will have a knock-on effect for perceptions globally. Because if the UK, as a large population country with a high number of vaccinations, can come through this spike with low hospitalizations and low deaths, then we can pretty much conclude that the virus has been vanquished and that vaccinations work, and that should be a significant encouragement to everywhere and everyone to go out and get a vaccination. Now, there will of course be arguments from a small percentage of the population who will continue to argue that these are untested and that there are long-term consequences, and we don't know what those long-term consequences are, and that these are new pieces of technology and we haven't ever used them before, so a higher degree of caution is required. That's, and all of that is true, but from a societal perspective, then there will be a clear determination to continue to vaccinate. So the UK is certainly going to be the country that everyone is going to be paying attention to, and not least because today was Freedom Day and they are removing a lot of the restrictions on movement and activity. So what happens in the next couple of weeks is certainly going to be a big deal for the developed markets. But the challenge for emerging markets is that they don't have access to the vaccines just yet. Now, companies like Pfizer and BioNTech, they are massively increasing dosages. The challenge too for the emerging markets is that the Sinovac doses that were exported by China and given away are less than effective. And the vaccination programs that a lot of these countries engaged in were probably for naught. So they're pretty much starting at square one. So it does suggest that emerging markets are going to have a more difficult time in the next 6 to 8 weeks. And that is weighing on perceptions. So the emerging markets ETF is now right back in the region of the trend mean, and of course it's being weighed on by the performance of China's tech companies, which represent significant weightings. With the stress in South Africa, the South African ETF is breaking lower, so it has now broken its sequence of higher reaction lows. Then the dollar index remains quite steady. And it is continuing to hold here above the region of the trend mean. As we think then again about the growth environment, well, the bond market, and it is really the bond market absolutely everywhere, is willing to give clear credence to the view that inflation is going to moderate. And if inflation is going to moderate, well, then growth is probably also going to moderate. So all of this talk that we've had about tapering is pretty much off the table. And it's extremely unlikely that there is going to be any further movement towards additional interest rate hikes globally or reducing the quantity of bonds being purchased. And that's a fundamental support for bonds in the short term. It's likely that we're going to see additional moves to support growth and inflation. And it means that the negative real interest rate environment is going to hold a while longer. So gold prices were in mildly negative territory in here today, but they were well off the low. And this is, I think, supportive of the view that we've seen a higher reaction low and that growth is likely to moderate, which is certainly likely to be beneficial to the gold market overall. And with gold beginning to steady and oil weak, then it's likely to create some demand for gold shares. Now, they were weaker in here today and they were at a new reaction low. But I remain of the view that it is not going to fall back below the $30 area, which would suggest that we are back in a buying range for gold prices. And if this is a higher reaction low for gold, then there's clear potential for additional upside, because this truly is a value-oriented sector. And I think those are, in a broad risk-off environment, the big question over the next 24 hours is going to be whether the VIX index starts to come back down again. But certainly today was a risk-off environment. There is growing perceptions that we've gone about as far as we're going to go in terms of growth and inflation. And we're going to have to see a significant reacceleration in supply of new money to reignite significant new demand. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.